Welcome back, Michael Warren Thomas. It's Naturally Green at SaverLife.com. And, wow, we had a brush with spring this week. Nice, warm temperatures. And it felt great to be outside. I didn't get some pruning I needed to done on my apple trees, but I'll do that in, but maybe today, maybe the next some point this next week. Not really a rush to do it, but I got to get the suckers off so they don't triple in size this year. And apple trees, it's great to have apple trees, but they're a fair amount of pruning work. But that's all right. I've had them for years, and I only have three, one really small one. So I don't have that many, and they're not that big a tree. But it does take a couple hours to prune them. And one of them really needs more of a renovation. It's become a kind of a tangle of branches. And this past week I did a garden club Zoom meeting on pruning, and the idea of the hour-long presentation was pruning can be an art form, and not just a chore, which and I kind of enjoy pruning. It's, I don't know, a chance to think about the form of the tree. And as I said in the Zoom presentation, you should definitely take a class on bonsai at some point. There's a Bonsai Society in Rochester. There's International Bonsai Arboretum in Henrietta, Bill Valvanus. And there's so some great opportunities to take a bonsai class at some point. I'm not sure they're offering them now with the pandemic still going, but that will end, and maybe this fall the time to take a class on bonsai, or you could do some online study, some fairly simple research online right now this winter as we head toward early spring. It'll get you thinking about the forms that different trees take. And the whole idea of bonsai, well, from my perspective, is that you're trying to make a very tiny plant relative to its normal size, make it look like the mature plant, or sometimes make it look like, you know, one that is, looks sort of half dead and gnarly up in the mountains, you know, surviving for hundreds of years. You can try to give it that effect in a bonsai. You're actually removing some of the bark and creating wounds that are intended to make it look like it was an incredibly old plant. So, and there's lots of kind of cool techniques that you can use on bonsai that you really can't use on a, you know, large scale shrub or tree. With a bonsai, you can wrap the branches with wire. They often use copper, but you could really use any wire that'll, it's not so thick you can't bend it, and not so thin that it won't stay in place. And it is, you're using the wire to adjust the direction of some branches. And once those branches, you know, have been that way with this wire for, I don't know how long it takes, but let's say a year or 6 months or something, then you can take the wire off and those branches will stay in that same position. So you can force branches to cascade down or to go out all, you know, on one level. There's all sorts of things you can do, and you'll get those ideas with just seeing some of the photos online. I'm sure there's some videos too of how to prune bonsai or how to create bonsai. But sometimes people will just take a plant from a nursery. It might be a juniper It seems to be a popular one is the sort of creeping juniper, low-growing juniper. And you buy one of those, and I don't know, might be. I don't know how much it would be. Maybe $20 or $30, somewhere in that range, probably. And then you take it out of the pot, you cut off really most of the roots, put it in a bonsai pot. Maybe you want to do the heavy pruning first, just because you're going to end up pruning off most of the shrub, most of the roots, and then putting it in a little tiny pot and trying to, in this case, create this cascade like it's, coming over a rock, and just in nature. So that's one of the things I love about bonsai is that it's all about the natural form, really. And so often out in our landscapes, we prune things into tabletops and gumballs and various shapes, which is fine in a topiary garden, but they're very high maintenance. And just a couple tabletop ewes or privet hedges will drive you crazy because as soon as you prune, there's new growth that then sticks up and looks like you need to go out and prune it again. So, some cold days certainly left here for late winter, early spring, and take a look at some bonsai. You might find it fascinating. And I will say I've killed every bonsai that I've owned, and I've owned, not any valuable ones, luckily, but, little starter bonsai. I got some as a kid, probably when I was 10 or 12. I had a couple. So this fascination with bonsai goes back a long time for me. And I took a class with Bill Valvinus, and as part of the class, you got maybe three or four bonsai, and these were little seedlings, very small bonsai. But I did kill those. They're in very small pots. Watering them is an issue, but there's ways around that. You can put that small pot in a bigger pot that holds water and not have to water it as frequently. So definitely, at least, and I took that class with Bill Valvinus just for experience with pruning, not because I really particularly wanted to have bonsai, but to learn more about the pruning style and the art form that pruning is. So again, you'll have more fun with pruning if you do a little research and maybe look into bonsai, and if you have the right tools. One of the people in the garden club mentioned that there is a Thelco store. I guess one of their main distribution centers is near Shortsville, which I had no idea. I've been using Thelco pruning shears and folding saws for 35 years and had no idea. I've been promoting them for a long time, for decades, actually, in classes and on the radio, etc. And there's this outlet. So I'm going to head over there this week, probably, to check it out. If you want any details on it, I can email you. Just send me a note, michael@saverlife.com. I think it's called, the store is, and again, this is not as much about retail as it is a wholesale distribution center for them, but I think it's called Amberg something. So I'll let you know next week after I've been there, and if you are going to do some pruning, get a couple new tools and get good quality ones. I don't get any free tools from Thelco for mentioning them. I just think they're some of the best quality tools, and they last for decades. You'll have them for a long, long time. And the folding saws have replacement blades, which is handy because they do occasionally snap if you're not careful when you're cutting. They're very tough blades, but when you're pruning, as I used to do four or six hours a day, invariably you end up bending or snapping a blade once in a while. But a homeowner probably won't, and one replacement blade as a backup is probably fine. I think I had five backup blades and a couple of saws, but again, that's for someone who's doing it all day long. So I'll have more details on that next week. But again, so having the right tools, learning something about bonsai in the form of trees and shrubs, and then knowing what you're pruning, you need to be able to identify them. If you can't identify a plant that you think you want to prune, send me a couple photos and I'll try to identify it for you. Send them to michael@saferlife.com. If you don't know what it is, you really could make some big mistakes in pruning it. You could turn a potential tree worth a few hundred dollars into a small shrub that's worth, $20 or $30, which would be a big mistake. So again, if you don't know what it is, get some help identifying it from me, from a neighbor, friend, or relative. But it is key to know what it is. Also going on this morning at 10 a.m. is the regular Saturday class at the Birdhouse. And this week, today, it's going to feature the Eastern Bluebird. You can find out more about bringing them into your property. And some of it depends where you live. They don't spend much time in the city neighborhoods like mine because they like more wide open spaces. But maybe you live near a more wide open space and you may see them. So 10 a.m. this morning online, it's a virtual class. It's free and you can just check out the Birdhouse on Facebook. And they also do some classes on Tuesdays. About 10 a.m. as well. So we have a couple opportunities each week to learn about birds and wildlife in general and nature. This past Tuesday, they had one on birds nesting, nest boxes, how to encourage them to nest in your yard. And you can listen to that after the fact. Now it's on their Facebook page with Liz Magnotti, their general manager. So they were doing in-person classes until the pandemic, and now they've have been doing them online for pretty much this entire time. As the pandemic ends, I'm sure they'll be in-person classes again. But right now, check out Facebook, The Birdhouse on Monroe Avenue, and today featuring the bluebird, which is a beautiful bird, and but they do have certain requirements and some tips on the size of the house to try and get them to nest in and where it should be placed and how high and all those details. I'm sure Liz will talk about this morning. So 10 a.m. The Birdhouse will be live, and you can put questions in through Facebook to Liz, and she'll answer them. It's an exciting time right now because a lot of birds are migrating through or are migrating back here. The robins arrived, and it was probably 2 weeks ago that I saw about 10 robins along the Genesee River. They're eating privet berries, I think, or buckthorn berries. And they were right along the river, and all in kind of in a group. I was thinking maybe they'd they're travel buddies, and had come up from further south. And and now I see them everywhere. Tons of robins are back, and it'll probably be only a matter of a couple of weeks for Baltimore Orioles. Even hummingbirds come back surprisingly early. And what an amazing week of geese flying. There were just constant geese flying this past week, taking advantage of the southerly winds, that warm air helping them to fly north. I heard dozens of different times the geese honking way up in the sky, or some lower, some right down on the Genesee River, getting something to eat, something to drink before they head back to fly north. And also, later this morning, I'm going to be doing a Zoom Garden Club presentation on monarchs. Looking forward to that. And consider raising some monarch butterflies this summer. Or at least planting some milkweed and encouraging them to live in your yard. They only lay their eggs on milkweed, and that's the only thing the caterpillar can eat. It's kind of amazing. We're used to being omnivores. We eat plants and animals and herbs and mushrooms, and we eat pretty much everything. That's what omnivore means. And the monarch butterfly caterpillar, it will only eat milkweed. It doesn't even drink water. It's kind of hard to imagine. Doesn't need any water. It gets all its water liquids from the plant itself. And it is that's amazing that's all it needs is the milkweed plant. So you can plant some milkweed. If you plant the seeds, that isn't going to help any monarchs this year because those little plants aren't going to be big enough. But in a couple of years, you'll have larger milkweed. If you can find someone that already has milkweed, you can dig up some of those roots, which can be pretty deep. You don't need the entire root. You just need a decent-sized chunk of it, and put that root in. And that way, you have a possibility of attracting monarchs this year. The milkweed doesn't emerge from the ground until some point later in April, and then you'll know where to look to dig it up. But the roots do go fairly deep. They just have kind of long white roots, like one main root, and the monarchs themselves are probably leaving Mexico around now. There are not as far fewer than there used to be. So that's why we need to plant more milkweed and encourage them, because a lot of the milkweed that was there before has been killed off with herbicides, development, farmers using more herbicides, using Roundup, just over complete fields multiple times a year, and milkweed is just plummeted in numbers, and that makes it that much harder for the monarchs to find it. So the last 4 or 5 years, I've raised about 150 monarchs each year from just my yard, just the milkweed here in my regular size city property. And the milkweed coexists pretty well with most of my other plants. There's some in the vegetable garden, there's some in the flower garden, there's some with the shrubs. And while you normally see it growing out in the sun, full sun, the milkweed in my yard seems to do quite well in quite a bit of shade. And the monarchs come and lay their eggs, and that's why I go out and collect those eggs, which basically you do by cutting the milkweed plant in half, kind of, because the monarch only lays one egg on one leaf, and you can't remove that egg from the leaf. It's just too small. And you can't really just bring the leaf inside, because the leaf is not going to stay alive that long if you've disconnected it from the stem. So I cut the stem in half, put that in water, like a little vase in essence, and then that keeps the plant alive so the caterpillar can eat the milkweed. And they can eat a lot of milkweed in the end as they get bigger. They can eat entire leaves in a day, and those are they're large leaves on some milkweeds. So I'm looking forward to raising more. We won't see the monarchs arrive here until mid-late May, probably, but they are leaving Mexico, or perhaps have already left. They usually leave in the February-March time frame and start flying north, and they will... These will not be the same ones that reach Rochester. They have multiple generations over a year, about four generations, and it's really the second or third generation that reaches Rochester, and then it's the fourth generation that flies back to Mexico. Overwinters, starts flying back north and lays more eggs. So that fourth generation lives a long time, relatively. The other generations live, 6 weeks in that, somewhere in that range. So monarchs are fascinating, and just by looking for them, by raising a few of them, by just watching them lay eggs in the milkweed in your yard, you will learn a lot about nature and be more connected to what's happening in your yard. So if you want details, on where to find these eggs, how to look for them, email me, michael@saverlife.com, and I'll get you some more information. The George Eastman Museum has absolutely stunning several areas of winter aconite under trees. One of them, probably the largest, is under the big beech tree at the entrance off East Avenue. You don't get the full impact of the winter aconite unless you drive up into their parking lot, because East Avenue is kind of slightly lower level than the Eastman House is, and so you really should just drive in the parking lot to see these winter aconite. They only open when it's sunny out. So today, they're going to be really gorgeous. If it's a cloudy day, they're still pretty. They're yellow, but their flowers are not open. So this is the day to see them. Bright, sunny day today. And then on the other side of the Eastman House, and you can't drive through anymore, for the time being at least, to the University Avenue side of the Eastman House. But if you go around and drive around the side streets to get there and come in, you'll see another area of some beautiful winter aconite under a large tree on that side of the Eastman House too. So today is the day. They've been in bloom for this past week, and they'll probably stay in bloom for a while, but you don't know how many more sunny days we're going to get. Crocuses also, they need sunshine to open. On cloudy days, they'll just stay shut, which I was thinking about is probably a good idea from the plant's point of view, because you really need the sun out for the bees to fly, to pollinate, and if the bees aren't flying because it's the sun isn't out, then you might as well protect the plant and the pollen and stay closed up. So who knows whether that's the reason, but it seems like a good reason. Again, you got to target sunny days to go and see them. I've seen quite a few crocuses in bloom. There are many varieties of crocuses, and some of the earliest ones are the smallest ones, and these are really tiny crocuses. I saw some on Harvard Street yesterday, or some on my street here in the 19th Ward. There's quite a few little tiny ones. They are maybe an inch high, about an inch and a half, really tiny, and tend to be kind of light colors, light purple, light pink, and kind of a light yellow. And then there are larger crocuses, which are a couple inches high, and those are just starting to bloom, and some of those have some more darker purples, yellows. There's one called Pickwick that's purple and white. So there are several different sizes of crocus. Longwood Gardens has the little tiny ones in some huge lawn areas, just acres of these little crocus in bloom, which are pretty spectacular when the sun is out. I guess the other thing, these little pretty delicate plants, especially these little tiny crocuses, if it's going to rain or snow, they want to have their buds closed so they don't get knocked down by the wind and the rain and the snow. And so another reason to stay closed unless the sun is out. So you should plant some of these for this coming fall, put them in, and then next year you can enjoy some of these really early bulbs that are they're pretty spectacular this time of the year, I think, as some of the very first things to bloom, and pretty reliably blooming in March. It's barely mid-March and they are in full bloom. Look around your yard, plan some areas, take a few notes, because it's a long time from now that we'll be buying those bulbs. It might be helpful to take a few notes on where you'd like to put them, how many you'd like to get. The crocuses will expand in number somewhat underground. They don't seed themselves at all, but the winter aconites and snowdrops do seed themselves, and so you can help spread those seeds over a wider area, and a couple years from now, you will have far more winter aconite and snowdrops than you have now. If you go up into Highland Park, the snowdrops are really beautiful right near the reservoir, on the eastern side of the reservoir, and that's sort of the Colgate Divinity side of the reservoir, and they are just beautiful, big area of snowdrops. And one of the advantages of having them on a slope is if you plant the top of the slope first, then they'll seed themselves from there, and gravity and rain will bring those seeds down the slope and take care of planting them for you. So, look around your yard for areas that could have some really nice snowdrops, winter aconite, scilla. Those will come later. Those are a couple weeks away, probably late March, when the blue scilla will come up. They also seed themselves. Pretty soon the cornice moss, the yellow dogwood tree, will be blooming. There's a couple of those at the corner of East Avenue and Culver. There's also some Mount Hope Cemetery right near, between the distillery and Mount Hope, Elmwood Avenue, along the cemetery side of the road. So these bloom yellow, not spectacularly yellow. Most people probably think they're forsythia, but it's a small tree, relatively small tree, and one of the very earliest to bloom. So it's not going to feel exactly like spring the next few days. Wind chill was 12 degrees this morning, but these plants really don't care. They the winter aconite, the little crocus, they could take much colder temperatures than this before they would be damaged. And actually, I don't think I've ever seen any of these little bulbs damaged by winter cold, which is kind of amazing given the fluctuations in temperature that we get this time of the year. So get out and enjoy the flowers, and really try and get to the Eastman House. You don't need to go in. You could park on a side street and walk around the neighborhood. You could pull into their parking lot and take a look at the winter aconite and then pull right back out again. But you got to see the winter aconite at the Eastman Museum. It is stunning right now. And today's the ideal day with full sunshine. We'll be back in the next hour with For Love of Food and Discover the Finger Lakes to follow. Tomorrow, it's the Grapevine. Michael Warren Thomas here at SavorLife.com. Have a great day.